defining characteristics of Geula, of redemption, is the capacity to bring together a variety of things that are, at first glance, disparate and separate. The ability to take things that are spread out and appear to have no connection one to the other, and to be able to bring them together, says the Maharal, that is one sign of Geula. I can think of a few people who are as capable and have distinguished themselves as much in terms of the capacity to combine, to bring together from different areas of Torah, from different areas of secular wisdom, from different areas of pop culture, to be able to bring together from such a wide range of places. Rabbi David Beshefkin, as the Director of Education at NTSY, someone who has published in Hasidic thought, someone who has published in issues relating to, referenced last night, contemporary Kira, someone with a very wide range of interests. On a personal note, I believe Rabbi Beshefkin is my Lekuti Maran Chavrusa from Shaul Vim. And just it is, when you talk about that kind of a figure, one who so well represents that form of geula described by the Maharal, it is something which is so powerful and I think so meaningful for us, who throughout our day learn we have a lot of different siddurim and a lot of different limudim, and to see someone who is able to bring that all together so nicely, the world of lamdas and the world of halacha, the world of machshava, and so many other realms, and to bring them together is a very unique schus for us. And on a personal note, always a real pleasure to see Rabbi Beshefkin. Without further ado, Rabbi Beshefkin.
Such an honor, such a privilege to be addressing you. To make it clear, the person who Rabbi Turetsky learns Lekutei Maharan with in Neshana Aleph, that's not a success story. He doesn't pull you and be like, we should really learn Lekutei Maharan together. You seem to be the greatest Hasidic master in the Beis Medrash. That was, he got chesed hours for that. He wrote them off. He did it on Fridays. It was a chesed case, and I appreciated it, the time we spent together. These addresses are difficult for me because it's really hard for me to find the added value. As he said, I have distinct interests. Where I am now is I'm working for NCSY, and I'm actually finishing a PhD in a school I'm sure very few of you have heard of. It's called the New School. It's a very famous fashion school called Parsons. If you looked at, I think, Michelle Obama's outfits were all made by our graduates. You shouldn't be looking there, but they were made by our graduates. The New School is probably the most left-wing school in the country. Left-wing, not religiously, because, you know, colleges, it's not a religious college, but left-wing economically and socially. The bathrooms, it's there's no men's, women. It's transgender bathrooms. It's not like the signs are written in like what look like Egyptian hieroglyphics. A lot of different signs and posters. It's hard to know where to go. But what I'm studying there is economics, and I like to talk a lot about economics. The one area which economics discusses is determining value. How much is something worth? How much is something worth when you go on and get a job? How much is something going to be worth when you have services of your own? And as you know, depending on your specialization, depending on how well you leverage, you're going to have different value. In sports, particularly, a lot of economic thinking has really trickled in a lot more. That's why there's so much emphasis on value over replacement player. Like if we took out this person, this player, and put in a random player, how good would this team do? So when I think economically about the value that I bring to the table, I'm a little out of sorts because I don't think there are a ton of areas where you're not able to hear from your rabbi and that I made connections to, had connections with when I was in yeshiva. But I do want to share, I found a small area where I'd like to maybe share some of my own experiences with yeshiva itself. With yeshiva itself. And I want to start by quoting a hesped that was written by Rav Aaron Lopiansky for Rav Nachum Persavitz. Rav Nachum Persavitz, if you've seen, wrote the Chiddushim. Rav Nachum is from the great Rosh HaYeshiva of Mir, and Rev Aaron Lopiansky, who's a Rosh HaYeshiva in Silver Spring, wrote a hesped for Rav Nachman Persavis. And he wrote a beautiful, delicious hesped. The opening of the hesped is, he says, there are two types of Torah. There is one type of Torah which he calls a Maharsha Torah. What's a Maharsha Torah? So if you've ever tried to give over or explain a Maharsha to somebody, you will know what a Maharsha Torah is. It begins with, so what did you learn in yeshiva? Say, Rebbe spoke at an amazing Maharsha. What did he say? So, 1 second. So Tosfos is going on that Gemara, and so the question is, the Reisha of Tosfos, what question is he coming off in the Gemara? It's very convoluted, very textual, and the person is sitting there as you're giving over this Torah, getting antsy, slowly inching away from you, obviously, as you're saying over this Torah. We've told over Parsha Divrei Torah like this, you know, that, oh, I have a great Vart on the Parsha. And you're like, okay, what's the Vart? So the Pasuk says, Vayitzyatzu Baha... Let me get a chumash. At that point, there are no chumashim in the tri-state area. So you're sitting there waiting for him to finish his Vart. He's going to every shelf. Maybe he's in the back of the sitter. No, it's past Shaney. Can't find the puzzle. You're sitting there for a little bit. A Maharsha Torah is very intricate, is very sophisticated, and takes a very long time to appreciate. It is not easy to appreciate a Torah from the Maharsha. It's probably least likely of the Torahs that you hear. You know, a lot of yeshivas will tell over ketzoses, briskudas, a very flashy chiluk. Maharshas are very textbook. What is the question that Tosfos is coming off of? As opposed to, he says, the Torahs of the Chidushi Harim. He says, there are Chidushi Harim Torahs. A Chidushi Harim Torah is a Vard, it's a Vard on Shas, it's a Vard in Machshava. Right when you hear it, your eyes light up. It's so sweet, it's so delicious. The question strikes you right away. You don't need to hand out, you know, Mar Makomo sheets. Does everybody have photocopies? There's none of that introduction. And you could go right into it and appreciate it and enjoy it. And Aaron Lopiansky says that just like the experience we have learning these Torahs varies in terms of their personality, so too the personality of Rav Nachum Persavitz, he embodied this Maharsha personality and this Chidushi Harim personality. That sometimes you meet friends, and he's the type of friend who right away he goes into a room, he lights up, he's got a great joke, great intro, everybody loves him, everybody enjoys him, they're always left wanting more, hearing more. And that friend's a delight, and you always love having him around. And then there's the other friend that we've all made this excuse, this caveat, you have to get to know him. Not right away, he comes off maybe a little awkward, a little slow, he's not the loudest person in the room, he's certainly not the most charismatic person in the room. But if you give him time, and you spend time learning to appreciate what he gives and what he contributes in conversation, and I'm sure in this room we have Chidushi Harim Jews and Maharsha Jews, then you'll learn to appreciate him, but it will take time. It is not a question, it is not an answer that is right away going to hit you and say, wow, this person really, he just made me think in a different way. He's such a joy to be around. That's the Chidushi Harim Jew. And then there are Maharsha Jews. When I went to Tzvat, I remember when I was in Shalavim, so in Tzvat, what's so magical about it in Tzvat is that the graffiti is also very Kabbalistic. Very Kabbalistic graffiti artists there. So they're, like, the Banksy of Tzvat is like a very Hasidically inclined individual. So I remember when I went to Tzvat, they had graffiti on the wall. It was Mamash graffiti, and it was a Medrash from Medrash Rabban Kohelis, it appears in other places, and it says that the Adam Doma is La'olam Katan. A person is like a small world. The Olam Gadol is like an Adam Katan. The person and a universe are literally synonymous. And I thought about this statement of Adam Doma La'olam Katan and what that means. We usually talk about it, of how we think about ourselves and individuals encompassing an entire world. We talk about every life of a person is considered like an entire world, like the Gemara in Sanhedrin tells us. But I wanted to relay a different approach, something I've never really shared, but hoping that maybe together these experiences can help. And that is, we talk a lot about the Olam HaYeshivas. The Olam HaYeshivas. And I like to think that yeshivas are also an Adam Katan. is a small person. Each yeshiva is its own universe and its own personality. I want to sensitize you for what I am, the misconception that I think a lot of you may have about your own Torah learning and your own relationships with yeshiva. And then I'm going to tell you a little bit about what I learned from my experiences in my yeshivas. So I've spoken about this 100 times with Rabbi Turetsky. We live in a magnificent time for Torah learning, and that is the time of the ribuy of Torah learning. What the people in this world, in this room, know is far more than the average student knew in Europe. There's no question about it. Far more than the average student knew in yeshivas, these early yeshivas. How do I know this? I know this. My grandfather was the first graduating class of Yeshivas Chafetz Chaim. I just showed a picture. Yeshivas Chafetz Chaim was a break off from Torah Vadas. Torah Vadas, the big personality there was Mr. Mendelovich. He deliberately didn't have smicha, so he, unlike most NCSY employees, did not go by the title rabbi. He just said Mr. Mendelovich. He brought a lot of Hasidic thinking, to the world, to the American world of yeshivas. Anytime if you've heard Reb Tzadok Tzvas Emes quoted, to my knowledge, the first person to really teach that on American soil in a serious way every Friday was Mr. Mendelovich. His Talmud is much more famous for teaching Reb Tzadok, and that's from Gedalia Shor. But that was Torah Vadas, and he brought a lot of that thinking to that world. There was a break off from Torah Vadas, and that was Yeshivas Chafetz Chaim. It was called Yeshivas Chafetz Chaim because it was started by the Chafetz Chaim's nephew, who was Rav David Leibovich. His son, who passed away a few years ago, was Rav Henoch Leibovich. It was the Chafetz Chaim's nephew, and I have the picture, the first Chag HaSmicha, which, fun fact, all the Nosmachim wore tuxedos. Let's bring that back. So they wore tuxedos, and on his left is Rav David Leibovich, and on his right is Rav Pinchas Scheinberg, who we all remember from the Tzitzis. It was the pre-Tzitzis years, the mustache tekufa that he was in, which was a good tekufa. And that was the mashkiach of the yeshiva. And my grandfather was in the middle. I have shtiklich Torah from my grandfather when he was in yeshiva that he published in rabbinic journals. And I've read the shtiklich. And I'll be honest, they're not wow shtiklich. They're not shtiklich that you would hear in your average shiur, hearing from Rabbi Reich, Rabbi Nussbacher, Rabbi Turetsky. There's no question the amount of Mar Makomos and breath that we have in yeshiva is not something that in earlier tekufas, the average student, again, they're always Mr. Young, but the average student really had, which is something to be so thankful for and so excited about. What did we lose from that? We lost from that, to come back to where I began, we lost from that the Adam, the person, the personality in the Torah, within our approach to Talmud Torah. Most of us, I mean, I could take a show of hands, I don't know how, like, have learned and gone through a sugya through, like, let's say, a Masifta. Masifta Gemaras, those here? We don't use them? That's impressive. Or a Kovetz, or a... Or one of the Shmaitzas on Gittin, or any of these Likut Svarim. And they're phenomenal, because they have all the Mar Makomos in front of you. I want to make a Ha'ara that you may have heard, but I want to build out in my own experiences and really share with you a little bit how to avoid this, which is when our relationship to Talmud Torah, to Yiddishkeit, is so much through a Svarim that is Malachi. And this is a great deal happening in Sifrei Chassidus and Sifrei Machshava. When you have, again, and they're phenomenal works, but somebody, you know, a Rav David Cohen, who will do a Yimei Chanukah, you'll have every Maramukam related to Chanukah right there. So the advantage is that the people in this room are able to connect and relate to a level of Torah that was simply unavailable and certainly not the norm in earlier yeshivas. But what did we lose? What I think we lost is connecting to the personality of Torah. What do I mean by the personality of Torah? When I was interviewing, somebody needs to write a book of all of the interview questions that you're asked when you apply to yeshiva and seminaries. Somebody needs to do that. She's going to put that on somebody in this crowd. My niece, who's in 12th grade, was just applying to Michalala, and she they asked what she wants to do in her spare time, which was like nothing fantastic, so she responded, "I like to cook for Shabbos," which is not a real hobby. And the interviewer, who is smart and knows when a 12th grade SKA girl is lying, was like, "What do you like to cook?" She's like, "Cake." She's like what kind? And she was like, "I lied. I don't really cook. I have a maid. I'm from the Five Towns. I don't know." she was honest. She was honest. She came around. I'm from the Five Towns too. We were all friends here. So somebody needs to talk about these interview questions. I was asked some great interview questions. Most of them are fairly typical. But I like paying attention to questions that are asked on interviews. And all of you should think for a moment, if you can remember, because write it down now, because you're not going to remember in a year from now, what was I asked on my interviews? Whether it was in Shalavim or KBY or Gush or Nativ, any yeshiva, what was I asked on the interview? And I was asked a great question on the interview. And they asked me, I remember where I was sitting, I was in DRS, and they asked me, what is the difference between the personality of the Rush and the personality of the Riff? What are they doing differently? And I was like, I mean, it was a great question. I was glad he didn't ask me to find them in a Gemara. I mean, they're somewhere back there, I don't know where. But I was so struck by the question. I was struck by the question because it is a question that if you are learning well and you are developing a relationship, and dare I say friendship, with Talmud Torah, it is a question that nearly everybody should be able to answer, whether it's the Riff and the Rush particularly, or whether it is understanding the personality of a Rebbe Chanan or a Ketzos or a Baal Shem Tov or a Chidushei Harim or a Marsha. Every Perush, every Rishon, every Acharon has a personality. There is a way to access how they impart information, how they analyze a sugya, and how they really develop a mahalach. And the way to do this, in some respects, is not to go likud crazy. Because if you read a likud, and you know every machlokas Rush and Riff, that's the guy who's got 1,001 friends on Facebook. But he doesn't know, and he knows all their birthdays, because he sends them HBDs every once a year. But he doesn't know, he doesn't have a friendship, he doesn't have a relationship with his learning. And I want to talk about developing a relationship with learning, and more so, I want to talk about developing a relationship with the Olam HaYeshivas. The Olam, as I said, is Doma LaAdam Katan, and the Adam is Doma LaOlam Katan, that it is a universe with its own personality, and I would like to share with you a little bit about the personality of yeshivas, and how you can find and develop a relationship with the personality of the Torah that you are learning. Let me start with developing a relationship with the Torah. And I really have three tips on this, three very clear tips on how to develop a relationship with the personality of Torah. One is you have to pick a friend. You have to pick a sefer, a could be a Rishon, it could be an Acharon, but you have to pick something that you are going to learn from beginning to end. And it could be a Masechta. When I was here, we were learning Masechta's Gittin. It happens to be I ended up learning that Masechta three other times in other yeshivas, but it became like I became very close with the Masechta. I am familiar with the Masechta. Not familiar with all. Gittin I know. I became close with Mesillas Yesharim when I was here, beginning to end. I don't know, everybody says stop after the 11th parak. I learned straight on to the end. Wasn't Zohar Ruach HaKodesh, but it was great the whole way through. And when you do it beginning to end, and it doesn't become, what's the Shita of the Mesillas Yesharim on this? What's the Machlokas Rush and Riff? But you start going through sugyas with a friend, you will learn to develop a relationship with those Mefarshim. That is tip number one. Pick a sefer. It can be anything. But pick one and stick with it. If it's not working out, you can dump a chavrusa, you can dump the sefer. That's okay. But pick one and go with it. It will reap incredible long-term dividends because it is going to be something that, A, you'll be able to contrast to. Because once you know the Rush really well, You'll be able to contrast him when you learn Aran. You have a basis of comparison. Once you understand how the Baal Shem Tov speaks, you'll be able to understand, so how did his Talmidim differ? Whenever you hear a shir that gives you these shitos, what they are doing, they're not getting it from the next Likud Sefer. I mean, that's probably the next generation will do that. But what they're doing is, they understand how the Baal HaTanya approaches a sugya in Machshava. They understand how Reb Tzadik is going to go through a certain approach. They develop an intuition, whether it's in Machshava, whether it's in Lamas, whether it's in Halacha. People who have this, you can sense it right away, that they have an intuition for how Halacha works, they have an intuition for how Machshava works. They did that by developing friends, real relationships with the personality of the Svara. The two other tips are also fairly obvious, but it's something if you're not reminded of, you will skip. And that is, number one, everybody here needs to read introductions to Svara. Famous mimer that the introduction is the neshama of the Sefer. The Gra talks a lot about the importance of introductions in his commentary on Shir HaShirim. Don't skip introductions. They are the best part of a Sefer. They tell you about what the author was going through. They tell you about the life of the author. They tell you about what the Sefer was trying to accomplish. I'm sure you've all seen it quoted, but don't rely on the quote. If you haven't seen the Hakdam of the Ketzos, this is the year to open it. Find the Chavrusa and say, we're going to go through all of the major Hakdamas to Svarim and find out what they are about. Hear from the author what he was trying to accomplish. Read the Hakdama of the Igros Moshe. Read all the Hakdamas in Maseches Brachos of the Ramban, of all the Rishonim have, of Shmuel HaNagin, all of the Rishonim have their Hakdamas at the beginning of Maseches Brachos. They are astounding. Hakdamas introduce you to a personality. Number three, this is, I applied very, I had a brief flirtation with a PhD in Jewish studies. It is, I ended up getting a master's in Jewish studies in Polish Hasidus, which as far as making money goes, is not the wisest investment. But I did flirt a little bit with getting a PhD in Jewish studies in Emory. And I kind of, this is like the PhD that got away. I still like to write on it. But the topic I was going to write on, when you apply to PhDs, it's interesting. The PhD programs don't work. In yeshiva, you apply to yeshivas, you apply to colleges, you apply to universities. In PhDs, you apply to professors. You apply to a specific professor. Same in psychology school, same in any major PhD program. You apply to a specific professor. So the key is be creepy. Be like, hey, I loved your article from 1984. It was great. Thank you so much for writing it. Be that guy. You have to know everything about these specific teachers. I was going to write, I did not end up writing it, but it's something that is still reading the correspondence of Gedolei Yisroel. What do I mean by correspondence? So we talk a lot about Machshava. We learn Machshava Svarim. Like I'm gonna pile Hasidus into that Sefer. A Machshava Sefer would be the Baal HaTanya, Reb Tzadok Tzfas Emes, or Gedaliyahu, Miftah Meliyahu. And then we have this other world that we talk about, but if you really were pressed on it to ask, what do you mean by that? We probably all would fudge, and that is what's called hashkafa. We love talking about hashkafa. It's just like 10:30 at night, there's chalent, on a date, not sure what to talk about. Hashkafa is your go-to man. It's great. Do you want to make aliyah? That sounds like hashkafa. I have no idea. Let's talk about that. So we like talking about Hashkafa, but we don't really know what we mean when we talk about that body of knowledge. We know what we say, where are the Halacha Svarim? So you'd say, Mishnah Berurah, Shulchan Aruch, Tur, where are the Lamda Svarim? The Reb Chaims, the Reb Chanans, Berach Shmua, I could point to the shelf. Where are the Machshava Svarim? Where are the Musar Svarim? I could find that too. Where's the Hashkafa section? So some Bati Midrashim will have Hashkafa there, and it'll be like miscellaneous. Maybe that's where they'll put the English Svarim. What do we mean? What do we mean when we talk about Hashkafa? So I'll tell you what I think. What Hashkafa relates to. The same way that we hear a distinction, and I'm sure all of you have heard distinctions between Emunah and Bitachon. What's the difference between Emunah and Bitachon? Emunah right, is the theology of how God interacts with the world and what I should be believing in terms of God, in terms of how he runs the world. Bitachon is how that unfolds in practice. Bitachon is how you decide, how you make decisions, how you, based on whatever emunah you have, bitachon is going to be, how that is going to be unfold in the decision making and the practice in your life. I'm talking broadly. So if we could draw a parallel, machshava is the system of how God unfolds in Torah. It is the neshama of the Torah. It is how the system and the theology of HaKadosh Baruch Hu unfolds inside of our Torah. How does that affect my decision making? How does that affect whether or not I make Aliyah or I do Bekiyas or Be'in or just learn Gemara Rash or Gemara Rashi Tosfos? That is Hashkafa. That is where I take the machshava of how God is manifest in my Gemara and how God is manifest in my Svarim. And Hashkafa is how I play that out in my decision making. So different people have different Hashkafas. You can have the same machshava, we agree in principle, but we've taken that in two different Hashkafas. We have two different approaches in how that unfolds in our life. So where do you find Hashkafa? So that is getting back to the lost PhD dissertation that maybe one of you will complete, which is dealing with the Igros of Gedolei Yisrael. If you have never opened up the letters of Gedolei Yisrael, and they are very available, it is not something you need to learn b'chavrusa, they are very manageable. It is watching Gedolei Yisrael deal with world-changing problems. It's watching Reb Chaim Ozer figure out what to do with the yeshiva during the persecution of the Holocaust. It's finding out how Rabbi Kiva Eger is going to deal with his life after the death of his wife. Believe it or not, if you think, I mean, none of you, I assume, are like in the formal shidduch parsha, but Shadchanim don't have the best reputation. If it's any consolation, in the 1800s, they were just as annoying, and even with Rabbi Kiva Eger, they constantly were trying to set up Rabbi Kiva Eger, and he has a lot of letters where he says, I cannot go out right now. I lost my wife. I used to, you know, there's a famous passage where he's telling off a shadchan, one of his talmidim, saying, I used to stay up all night talking about Yerushalayim with my wife. He talks about, he turns down job offers, where he says, I'd rather sweep up and be a janitor in a base medrash than take a job in Rabbanus, which I'm not sure if that's because Rabbanus just, they had a bad board in Puzna. It could be. Young Israel Puzna was very, very difficult. But whatever it was, Rabbi Kiva Eger, if you want to learn his personality, if you want to learn his hashkafa, how he took his Torah and actually made decisions in his worldview, the place to find them is his igros, is in his letters. And I'll give you a bunch that you could find right here. I mean, if you haven't heard already, I mean, not just the famous two or three that are quoted, but Igros Pachad Yitzchak is something that you should be returning to over and over again. They are phenomenal, phenomenal letters. You need a dictionary because he has a very flowery Hebrew, but you can work through them. You can work through the Igros of Rabbi Kiva Eger. You can work through the Igros of the Chazon Ish. They're difficult, and they're like very censored. It looks like they came out of Russia, the KGB. All the names are a lot of dot, dot, dots. It's not sure what he was dealing with, but you could read through those letters. They are amazing. They are amazing letters, and it is an area of Torah that is too often neglected, and because of that, we fail oftentimes to develop a relationship, a friendship, with the Gedolim, with the Talmidei Chachamim, who we're studying. So you can walk out, and when you're asked on that interview, what is the difference between the Rush and the Riff? You have an answer to that question. You know who Rabbi Kiva Eger was. But until now, I've been talking about particular Talmidei Chachamim. I want to share with you my experiences in yeshiva, because your yeshiva studies is starting now in Shalavim. I started in Shalavim too. I want to tell you about the personalities of the yeshiva I studied, not because any yeshiva was better than the other, they're all great, they all had everything, but to sensitize to what are the emotions, what are the relationships that you can develop in a yeshiva and what you should be looking out for in your own yeshiva experience. Yeshivas have changed quite a bit from when they were, you know, in Europe. Yeshivas started a whole variety of reasons. I don't know if you've heard somebody from the yeshiva quote. There's a fantastic, fantastic book written by a fairly strong Talmud Chacham named Shaul Stampfer, who wrote a book called The History of Lithuanian Yeshivas. It is a phenomenal book. He happens to be a phenomenal person. He lives in Ramot. His father was a conservative rabbi in Portland. And he wrote a book on the history of the yeshivas, why yeshivas started. And it goes through the history of Valuzhin, the history of Pels, the history of Mir, the history of Slabodka, and he talks about what was unique about each yeshiva. The one thing that you have to know about yeshiva is that yeshiva was, you know, I had access for a moment to the Twitter sphere, so I saw somebody posted that this was like Hak week in yeshiva, because everybody's visiting, a lot of chevri here, a lot of Hak outside, so... So Hak in yeshiva here, thank God, is fairly G to PG rated. It's just people kind of schmoozing, maybe some tier 3 Lashon Hara happening in the hallway. Nothing that anybody's getting arrested for. Yeshivas back then, was literally the lifeblood of these students. And the Hak fest, so to speak, of the yeshivas back then would oftentimes literally turn violent. They would turn violent. There were stories of people egging the yeshiva, egging the Russian yeshivas, hiding the Russian yeshiva's chair, trying to really push around other talmidim. They were vicious, and part of that viciousness was that their whole personality was immersed in their yeshiva experience. There's a fantastic prank that Rav Nelson Kamenetsky tells over in his book. I love this because it shows the yeshiva guys were sharp. They were very sharp, and they were much more playful in their learning. So the Alter of Slabodka, who was the mashkiach in Slabodka, it used to be in yeshiva. There was the mashkiach was the center of gravity in yeshivas, and the Rosh Yeshiva was Moshe Mordechai Epstein was like second fiddle a lot of times to the mashkiach. So he was the mashkiach, and there was a minhag, a custom in his house that he would only invite the older students to his house to eat over at meals. You have to be older, and this was a custom when I learned, and we'll get to my experiences in yeshiva. When I learned in Neri Yisroel, there was a healthy elitism that it existed in the yeshiva of the older bachurim. There used to be, I just missed this tikkun, there used to be a special like VIP table in the lunchroom that only older bachurim were allowed to sit at. It was like, whoa, like you guys really gotta get a job or something. No, but there was a table where the older guys would sit, they would learn there and they were chashev, and younger guys were not allowed to sit there. That was like very mechubad. They would wear their hats and jackets to the base medrash, to the dining room, and it was like, wow, these are special people. So the altar invited a younger student who was the Pchatskal Abramsky, who also became famous for his own accomplishments. I'm sorry, Rabbi Yechazkel Levenstein, who was later on the Mashkiach in Mir, and he invited him. And the older bachur were very annoyed that he invited a younger bachur to eat at the meal. So at the meal they turned over to him, and I think this is just delicious. It shows the Talmidei Chacham and how they pull pranks. They said, I just want you to know the custom. Because he always invited the new guest to lead in benching. Say, you're on the sign of Arech. So he was the new guest. He was the younger Bachar. All the older Bachar were like, who's this? Who's this young guy, this Shana Aleph guy, you know, coming? Oh, we're all the Shana Gimel guys. We're so much more Chashim. Why should you be Mechadim? So they told him, you know, Reb Chasla, I just want you to know, when you bench, the minug in the altar's house is we ask Bershus the Vilna Gaon and Bershus the Baal Shem Tov before benching. And they looked at him, and he did it. He said, Rabbi Sander, Rif, Bershus, the Baal Shem Tov, Bershus, the Vilna Gaon. And that was great. They all laughed at him. It was like, you know, telling the person it's going to be a costume party, and he shows up, and everybody's wearing suits and ties. I thought that was fantastic. The creativity and the kind of using, you know, playful pranks was something that was very apparent in the history of the yeshivas. I asked Rev Shaul Stampfer, who wrote this book. He wrote an entire book on the history of the yeshivas. And I asked him, what was the most powerful story that you learned in all the time in your writing of the yeshivas, in all the times you went through the history of Volozhin, of Mir, what's the most inspiring thing? And the book is not there's no dirt in the book. It's not really telling you how evil. It shows you how playful and alive the yeshivas were. He says the most powerful thing he learned is that in Tells, there was a tekufa, which sounds a little strange, where the Talmidim took over the yeshiva and kicked out the hanhala. They locked the doors, and they kicked out the Rosh Yeshiva and the Rabbeim from their own yeshiva. And the Rosh Yeshiva of Tells, Reb Lazer Gordon at the time, was locked out of his own yeshiva. And he says that Reb Lazer Gordon started to get nervous because they were locked out for 2 days, 3 days, and Reb Lazer Gordon realized that the Talmidim inside who kicked him out, they only have enough food to last them 2 or 3 days. 2 or 3 days. So what he started doing is he started going to a window in the kitchen and throwing in rolls and throwing in butter and throwing in different things to eat to make sure that the Talmidim, so long as this rebellion went on, would be able to eat something, be able to be taken care of. Which showed you the Mesiras Nefesh, that relationship that the students and the Rosh Yeshiva had with one another is really, really something remarkable. So we spoke about developing a relationship with personality. I want to share with you the relationship that I had because, again, coming back to value add of what I can really bring to the table, I have studied in many yeshivas for a significant amount of time. I learned in Shalavim for close to 2 years. And after Shalavim, I learned in yeshivas Ner Yisrael for 3.5 years. And after Ner Yisrael, I learned in YU for another 3.5 years. We did smicha, did the masters there. And in between, in all of those summers, I would learn in Shar Yashiv. This guy sounds pretty confused. But I did all that, and it was great. And it was fantastic. What I want to talk about is the relationship with the Adam of those yeshivas, the Olam HaYeshivas. Who was the person? What did I learn? What was the personality of each of those yeshivas? Not to say that the other yeshivas didn't have it, but to kind of give you a guide to think about what you should be looking for and try to find and experience and embrace in your yeshiva experiences. Because I hope all of you will go on and you'll go to Yeshiva University or Torah or Neri Yisrael or yeshivas that have a Beis Medrash program. And in your summertime, you'll be able to learn the Beis Medrash. And don't just use that as a space for me to have svarim and where I get fed, but realize that each of those makomos that you study in has a personality and has the potential for a real relationship and friendship with the makom itself. To develop a relationship not just with your rabbeim, not just with the rishonim, through the igros, through the hakdamos that we spoke about, and through going through a sefer from beginning to end, but with a yeshiva itself. How is that done? So I'm going to go through each yeshiva. I want to tell you what those yeshivas, I think, concentrated on, and what was the Torah, so to speak, of their personalities. It's hard to speak about Shalavim while you're still here, because you guys are in it and you guys know about it. But sometimes it's easier from somebody who's removed from something. I'll pepper in a few of my more favorite igros. You know, Rav Huttner was corresponding with a Talmud who had left the yeshiva many, many years ago, who finally was starting to appreciate a lot of what Rav Huttner told him. And Rav Huttner quoted in the Pasuk, which if you ever go to Yeshivas Chachmei Lublin, it's right over the doors of Yeshivas Chachmei Lublin, and should give you a little bit more flavor for what this Pasuk really means. It says, L'chu banim shimuli, that in order to really appreciate something that you've heard or an environment that you've been in, L'chu banim, usually Rav Huttner says, say, come close, bow, come close to me. So why say L'chu banim? Go, leave, shimuli, and then listen to me. So says Rav Huttner, sometimes you need an absence, you need that off season, you need that time where you are away from it to really digest and really appreciate that place where you were in. So when I was in Shalavim, if I were to characterize it, Shalavim for me was about curiosity, was about appreciating my curiosity in learning. Curiosity is not a word that we use enough. Curiosity means, it means that I'm not necessarily upset if I do not find the answer, but I really appreciate the beginnings of conversations and the beginnings of questions. I delight in a great question that I heard on Shabbos. I delight in a ha'ara that I never heard before. That is something that you embrace and is something that you are so excited about, developing a curiosity. You should just know that there is a great book called The Most Human Human. It was written by somebody named Brian Christensen, not Jewish. And Brian Christensen took a test called a Turing test. Do you know what a Turing test is? Alan Turing was a really famous mathematician. He developed a test to figure out whether or not a computer has artificial intelligence. And the way that they do it is essentially you have a text conversation with a computer and with human beings, just through text. And if you're able to figure out which is the human and which is the computer's able to fool you, we would assume that that computer has artificial intelligence. They do this test every year. It's called the Loebner Prize. And this person, Brian Christensen, participated. He was one of the human confederates who did the test. He was behind the closed doors, and he was texting away on his phone and interacting with the judges, trying to be the most human human. And he won the prize. There's never been a computer that fooled all the judges, though people claim that it's been done. If you really look into it, it's never really been accomplished. And it really sheds light on what makes us human, what makes us into an Adam. And if it's one thing, Brian Christian says at the end, he points to two things. I'm going to focus on one. It is curiosity. It is what makes us human. It is the thing that distinguishes us most from the way other animals, computers, think. Computers, Picasso said, give you answers. People really thrive with curiosity. After Shalavim, which you already know about, I went to Neri Yisrael. I wanted to say two things about Neri Yisrael. One of them is an idea. One of them is an idea that I heard while I was in Shalavim by a Rav who now is involved in Columbia. There's something amazing in Neri Yisrael that I really did not fully see, and that is the sense, a real visceral sense of Kavod HaTorah. Visceral. I want to explain why. In Neri Yisrael, there's a fantastic minhag, which is that every time the Rosh Yeshiva gets up to go to the bathroom, to get a drink, the entire Beis Medrash stands up for him. I'm not saying that minhag should be instituted in other yeshivas. It's quite a bit of a distraction. But for somebody who's visiting Neri Yisrael, I promise you, and every year Neri Yisrael has college students from Johns Hopkins who for the first time see the whole Beis Medrash get up. I'm like, why is everybody getting up? And they say, the Rosh Yeshiva just got up, so we all get up until he returns back to his seat. It really leaves an impression. There is a sense of a third person. You're not friends. You don't talk to any of your Rabbeim. There is not a sense of that collegial friendship. There is a sense of otherness with your Rabbeim there that I embrace and that I think is really amazing. Rav Huttner writes in one of his Igros in the 132nd letter, and he says, we stand up for people when they're doing a mitzvah, and we stand up in front of Talmidei Chachamim. Those are the two times we stand up for somebody. Rav Huttner points out to somebody, he's writing to a shul that just hired a new rabbi. And he tells the shul, I want you to know something. There's something unique about standing up for a Talmud Chacham. A real Talmud Chacham. Viscerally, somebody who's otherworldly. And that is that when you stand up for that Talmud Chacham, the person giving kavod is now doing a mitzvah. So Rav Huttner says the minhag was at his time that then the Talmud Chacham would now stand up for the people standing up for him. Because the person who was dispensing of the kavod now becomes mechubad because he is involved in a mitzvah. There is no greater investment that you can make while you are in yeshiva than developing investments and relationships of kavod HaTorah, of people who you are mechabed. People who you, not sarcastically, not with an eye roll, but completely seriously, get them a drink of water. And you completely seriously say, what can I get you? Where can I drive you? How can I get you there? The experience of Kavod HaTorah, aside from being a phenomenal investment, because the person giving the Kavod becomes the Chefza of the Kavod itself right afterwards, it changes you as a person. And you should look for those opportunities. And there are ample amount of opportunities here. And part of that has to do with when you hear shiurim from Rabbeim, this is awkward to say because I'm certainly not advocating it for right now, is always going up and saying thank you and Yashar Koach to Rabbeim Talmidei Chacham who go out. It's not something that you'd be sensitized to, But it is something that the experience of giving Kavod HaTorah, there is no experience that is more mechubad than giving Kavod HaTorah itself. That was Ner Yisrael for me. I want to talk about YU and come to a little letter. I see I'm hovering with time, but I want to talk quickly about Yeshiva University and quickly about Shar Yashiv, because that's the juicy one. We'll leave that for the end. Everybody takes out their Marlboro, so don't do that. In YU, I used to say in YU, the distinction I would make between YU and Ner Yisrael, people would always ask me, because a lot of people, you'd say, why do you go to one or the other? I used to say, Ner Yisrael was a great place to grow up, and YU is a great place to be a grown-up. It is a great place to be a grown-up. You have to go to YU with a sense of autonomy and independence, embrace it, and run with it. Take the initiative and move with it. It is not something that you should feel neglected about. The sense of individuality and independence in YU is something that is fostered and is really incredible. And you see, people are grown-ups there. They have, their parents aren't going to go there to help them. There might not be a Rebbe every five blocks to put their hand on their shoulder. But you really develop a sense of independence. And that is where you know, like Putner famously says, where you take the boiling water off the fire to find out, you know, you can't figure out how much water is inside while it's boiling on the fire. You have to take it off the fire. And that happens when you're in the middle of Washington Heights, you're in YU, there is a sense of independence. I want to give a caveat about that sense of independence and come back to another letter. I'm plugging a lot of Igros for Putner. You'll pardon me. Rav Huttner was writing to a Talmud who was talking about looking up to older students for guidance. And Rav Huttner said something very interesting. He said it used to be when you look for a derech, for hadracha, so it used to be like it was following a motorboat. When you follow a motorboat, so 500 feet after that motorboat leaves a huge trail in the water. But if somebody walks on the street, they don't necessarily leave a footprint. It's just, you know, you don't see that I walked here, maybe there's a little dirt, but you can't necessarily follow that. But Huttner said, be careful that you should only follow boats and realize that you are sometimes going to be in situations where you're trying to follow people on the ground that don't necessarily leave impressions and don't necessarily leave footprints. And in those situations, you're going to have to rely on your own intuition and independence, reaching out to others, but you can't just follow a clear path, a sequential derech of what the guy before you did, and be confident that you're going to end up in the right spot. We're not necessarily following boats anymore, especially not when you come back to the United States. It's very windy out there, and the trail is not like a motorboat. It's far more like following somebody on the concrete, and you should be very careful when you follow people, especially if the way to succeed is to foster independence. You should be very careful that the people who you do rely on are those motorboats and able to leave a trail, and not people who aren't necessarily going to be able to be emulated in that way. I want to close with Shar Yashiv. Shar Yashiv was the love of my life. It was the place that I learned within the summertime. And I strongly urge all of you in the summertime to find a new makom to learn. Piece of advice. It could be a different base medrash, it could be moving upstairs. In this, it could be going obviously to a camp, it could be obviously going to a different base medrash, plop down in Lakewood for 3 weeks, plop down in the Mir, go to a different base medrash. I used to learn in Shar Yashiv. It's the right yeshiva for the summertime. It was great. I was always amused that in Shar Yashiv was the one yeshiva where you would ask somebody, why don't they go to certain Rav's Reb Tzadok Chabura in the morning? They'd be like, I go to the other Reb Tzadok Chabura during morning Seder. I'm like, that's awesome. I love that there are two right in the middle in the morning. But it was a great yeshiva, and morning Seder was a fantastic place. It was a fantastic place. I wanna make one pitch to kind of begin where we started from that story from Reb Shaul Stamper about Reb Lazer Gordon and his experience in the rebellion in Tel's yeshiva. Shar Yashiv, you don't usually think about it, is called Shar Yashiv. It's called that very deliberately. It means the rest will return. It's a statement that you will find scattered throughout Pachad Yitzchak. It, It was a yeshiva that was started by Rev Freifeld, who was the Rosh Yeshiva of Shar Yashiv. He was a student of Rav Huttner. Rav Huttner sent him personally, and there's a letter between them, to meet the Chazon Ish. Rav Huttner never met the Chazon Ish. It was his biggest regret in his life. He tore Kriya when the Chazon Ish died, and he's the only person in the last 100 years who appears by name in Pachad Yitzchak, to my knowledge. He had extreme reverence for the Chazon Ish. He sent Rav Freifeld to meet the Chazon Ish. And if you haven't read the Rav Freifeld biography, that's a Kodesh Kadoshim biography. It is the Luchos on Chinuch, and it is the Luchos on the life of Rav Freifeld. The Mesorah of Rav Huttner, in terms of his Machshava, did not go to Rabbi Freifeld. Rav Freifeld did not give wow, Machshava Shurim. The Mesorah of Chinuch, Rav Huttner, first and foremost, was a Machanech. He was a high school Rebbe first. He was the head of the high school, and then he moved on to the Yeshiva Gedol in Chaim, Berlin. He was a Machanech, and he spoke a lot to Machanechim. His Mesorah in Chinuch went to Rav Freifeld, and you could still feel it in the walls in Shar Yashiv. There is a vart in the biography that he quotes there, and Rav Freifeld says that this vart from the Alexander Rebbe is worth walking 2,000 miles to hear this vart. I'm not sure that I could justify that to everybody here. That seems like a really, really long way to walk to hear a vart. But you'll be the judge, and maybe think about it. You'll think about it in your own experiences of yeshiva on how important this vart is in building your own experiences with your yeshivas, whether that is in Shalavim or wherever, whatever personalities and friendships you end up developing with your yeshivas and with the svarim that you continue to learn. And the vart is as follows in Shmuel Beis, in Perek Chaf Beis. David HaMelech is just running from the Pelishtim. He is being chased by everybody, and he has a small group of people. He has a small group of people surrounding him, who are all running with him. They ran to Maras Adulam. For those of you who are more Hasidically inclined, that has a lot of meaning. The years that he spent in Maras Adulam, and he's hiding out there in a cave. And David HaMelech in the pasuk says, He's dealing with Ish, Shernose Avo, Ish, Mar Nefesh, Ish, Tsaras Leiv. He's dealing with all of these different people who have debts, who are broken, who are depressed. And Rav Freifeld pointed out something amazing. Rav Freifeld said that David's on the run here. He has this group of Tzebrachan people, these broken people, who are sitting out there on a cave being pursued, being chased, all by themselves. But he doesn't look at them and say, Sabrachin, Nebuch. He still calls them Ish. He still calls them a person. Someone with dignity, somebody with kavod, somebody with importance. Your experience in yeshiva needs to be through those eyes of David HaMelech. David HaMelech is described as having yifeh einayim. He had beautiful eyes. That's not because David HaMelech had blue eyes. It's because David HaMelech knew how to see things. He knew how to see issues in his own yeshiva. He knew how to see his friends. He knew how to see his chaverim. The way to grow and to develop in yeshiva is to make sure that the eyes that you look at your own yeshiva experience, and that those eyes are really only going to be seeing in the years after you leave, but the eyes that you look at your yeshiva experience with are yifeh einayim. Yifeh einayim, that the people you deal with are always being elevated to an ish, no matter what they're going through, no matter what tsar nefesh, ish matzuk, whatever situation that they're dealing with, and make sure that the yeshiva you are in is treating you like an ish. And you are finding those experiences that are building you up and developing the relationships and the friendships to ensure that your perspective with others in your own life and the yeshiva is one of optimism and yifei naim. Thank you so much. You remember that?